Hi, I'm Kim Cotola. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. There are many more podcasts available online at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to when you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Cradle My Heart Radio. Kim Cotola with you. And we are really pleased to welcome back to the program Jessica Slavensky. Jessica joined us to talk about listener questions and also to give us background on the ministry that she works with, which is PATH, Post-Abortion Treatment and Healing. And she serves as their clinical director, consistently looking for opportunities to share her clinical knowledge of the trauma of abortion with other clinicians who may struggle in identifying the post-abortive client. She also works on understanding the dynamics of the associated trauma, how post-abortion healing can assist the chemically addicted individual in overall recovery. And so she's in private practice as well as serving directly with those impacted by abortion. Thank you so much for being with us once more, Jessica. It's great to welcome you back to Cradle My Heart.
Well, thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, you know, as we talk about the things that you are engaged in there, which is so needed, and I think it's sad to say that it's a niche, given how many people need this type of help. Tell us about that. Tell us about working with other counselors, with other people in recovery circles, and how good or how poor the awareness is at this point, you know, of the needs of someone after abortion.
Right, right. You know, I used to think that clinicians would just be very aware that this is an issue. But what I'm finding is that many clinicians do not ask the question on their assessment if a person is post-abortive. Sometimes they will not even mention pregnancy loss. So it is something that oftentimes secular counselors will not even approach. I have had women come to me in my practice who have stated that they had a crisis pregnancy during counseling and that the therapist had encouraged them to abort, that they felt like they couldn't emotionally handle having a baby. So I'm really disappointed in that. However, as of late, I think I've met many pro-life counselors who really desire to understand the full impact, the full dynamics of someone who's experienced an abortion.
And so while we're on the subject of putting this in context, I'd like to hear your comment about the fact that the American Psychological Association does not recognize that there's an issue after abortion.
Right.
In fact, they have dismissed or debunked the good clinical peer-reviewed research that states that there are problems. So you're sort of pushing the boulder uphill with your peers, I would imagine. You
it's
could be.
So true. Absolutely true. It's just interesting how you know, the APA doesn't recognize that post-abortive women are not going to be able to emotionally tolerate going through a study if they have not received healing. So they are going to drop out because they have been traumatized, and these questions that they're asking are not going to yield, you know, the proper answer because they're going to be spinning like a top. They're not going to be able to make sense of it. So, yes, the APA, as we know, every so often they like to change criteria for certain disorders, and they've decided that abortion doesn't fit in the category of trauma.
Mm. And that's so interesting, too, because as you mentioned up front, okay, if I'm a therapist who have said, you know, you need to terminate this pregnancy for your mental health, mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to be looking for signs that that was a detrimental decision, right? I mean, if they are not persuaded that it's going to be harmful, they're probably not going to see the harm when it shows up or connect that that's the root of it.
Oh, exactly. I had one client who came to me who, again, her therapist encouraged her to abort. And when she did abort and she returned, the therapist said, you know, I don't really know how to help you, but maybe you could go online and find a support group. And I was just blown away. I was in disbelief that that is all she had to offer. It's pretty unbelievable. But I also remember a time, Kim, when I didn't understand it either. And I remember vividly being a very young therapist, an intern at the time, and I had a father bring his teenage daughter in who had had an abortion. And I really did not know what to do. So I understand to some degree why therapists don't get it. But I think it is our obligation to understand these dynamics.
Hmm. So let's talk about trauma. And let's talk about what is the role of trauma in an abortion? How to overcome its effects. What does trauma look like after abortion?
Trauma is so crazy making. And what makes this trauma so complex is that she thinks she brought it on herself. The abortion experience is very unnatural. So what happens a lot of times is she will have symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Trauma surfaces in many ways. She may avoid certain people, places, or things that remind her of her abortion. She might avoid baby showers or take a different route to work, so she doesn't have to drive by the clinic. So there are a lot of avoidant behaviors. And it really fits into the principle of fight or flight, which is how, you know, God made us, so that when we're aware of danger, we're going to either run or we're going to fight. But there's another component that the post-abortive woman does, and she freezes. So it's flight, fight, or freeze. And sometimes when she's having a flashback or an intrusive thought about the abortion experience, she might simply freeze and not know what to do. So it's really, really crazy making. Anniversaries of the abortion, smells or colors that she saw when she was in the clinic, all of these things can trigger a traumatic experience. So it's almost like they're back at the clinic. And oftentimes, relationally, they just really stay closed off from other people because they don't want their secret to come out.
Mm. Jessica, as we think about this, I'm a person who, I have a very long fuse, and I think, you know, when I am threatened, I do tend to freeze. So not mm-hmm. necessarily just to have you work with me, but if somebody can relate to this, I think a lot of people are like this, in other words. So if I just don't even recognize how terrified I am, but I just freeze, mm-hmm. and then I do survive it, I might walk away and say, well, okay, I wasn't traumatized. I just,
right.
you know, nothing really, I'm just numb now. And,
right.
and I think it takes a long time for the thawing, if you will, to happen after you do freeze. I think that's really helpful for people to realize that, and I've found that about myself and about other people too. It's why armies train soldiers what to do in combat, because so many of us freeze when threatened.
Right.
And a panic
mm-hmm.
reaction doesn't necessarily look like yelling and screaming and running around.
Exactly.
You may just not do anything, which can be the problem. And it also,
right.
I think, can set a pattern in place of not being able to respond.
Yeah, it's interesting how a lot of women lose their voice. They lose their ability to kind of speak up for themselves because they kind of feel like, well, I'm not going to be heard anyway, or, you know, I shouldn't protect myself. I'm just going to take it. It's really disabling, incredibly so.
And so how do we overcome this? If the light is starting to dawn and we realize that, okay, there has been some trauma that's occurred, is it specialized to abortion, or is there a process that works with all trauma situations that we can appropriate for post-abortion healing?
You know, it is a very complicated issue when it comes to abortion. Trauma in and of itself, trauma work is incredibly specialized, and it's effective. It's so important that she go to someone who understands trauma and who understands abortion. Because what has to happen is she has to get in a support network and someone who is skilled in this area. Basically and essentially she'll be in recovery from her abortion experience. And she's entering into healing. And, you know, interestingly, the abortion experience itself is usually so isolating and so it's done really alone. So the recovery experience has to be different. And it has to be with a group of people who will validate her and support her. And that's what we want to have happen, so she knows, oh, these things are normal under the circumstances. The reason I'm, you know, freaking out about this or freezing about that or avoiding baby showers, that makes sense. So I'm not crazy. This is a normal reaction under the circumstances. So it is vital that she not try to white knuckle this and do it on her own. There is help, but it is important that she sees a pro-life therapist.
Well, and I think what you also said in the beginning, you know, what I see is that not only are we white-knuckling it, but we're also saying, I shouldn't feel this way. I should be able to get over this. I should, you know, judging what our reaction is rather than honoring it and trying to heal it.
Right. And I hear that so frequently. Oh, well, they just think I should just get over it. You know, this is the death of a child, the death of motherhood, the death of a relationship. I mean, this is so complex and so complicated. There's so many different losses, and it's all very secret. So you can't just walk this off. You know, and the way that you go about healing this wound that is so complicated is you really walk her into the pain and let her feel it and let her voice it and let her grieve it. When she gives birth to her grief, then she can move into bringing dignity to her baby. And that's the process to heal from this.
Mm. That is so profound. And I think, you know, there's another concept here that counselors work with that I think many of us are not aware of that is really helpful. And that's this idea of complicated mourning. I don't think our culture does grief very well in the best of circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, we think you get a week off of work if you're very fortunate, you know, to even have more than a couple of days for a funeral. And now you should just buck up and walk forward, you know, as if nothing had changed in your life. So, but when beyond grief, we get into complicated mourning, there's even more of a challenge there. Help us understand that concept.
Right. You know, the complex grief of abortion, it's just multifaceted. It's grief that extends beyond the identifiable loss. You know, it's complicated because it's kept secret. There's no support. There are not any Hallmark cards dedicated to having aborted your child. And there's a fragment or a loss of the relationship, the shattering of the dream of being a mommy, of having a family, not being protected as the bride or by the father of the child. You know, so it's really complicated physically, emotionally, psychologically, relationally, financially. So in getting beyond it, you do have to enter into the pain. We can't go around it. We can't jump over it. We have to go through it. And she has to be able to tell her story. and get validation and be supported with somebody who understands those dynamics. And she really does have to go back and pick up where she left off. And that was, you know, when she said, I'm pregnant, and people said, oh, just have an abortion, or, well, you know, you really should not have this baby. That's where we pick it up. And we say, what was that like? And let's make sense of it so that she can understand how this all happened. And that's where we move into, you know, giving birth to grief. And then once she identifies her baby, you know, as a real person and names her baby, brings dignity to her baby, the way that a mom does, the way that a mom and dad, they do for their children, then she can let go. Then she can move on. It's such a beautiful thing to witness. I mean, it's painful, but it's so beautiful.
Jessica Slavinsky is our guest. She's a licensed counselor who also is the clinical director for PATH, Post-Abortion Treatment and Healing, in the Atlanta area. And they have a number of approaches to the healing journey, including weekend retreats, Rachel's Vineyard retreats, Bible study individual sessions. And we've got their website linked at cradlemyheart.org, just a wealth of resources through the PATH ministry. Jessica, again, as clinical director, is helping us understand the many facets of abortion because, you know, as you've said, and I've pointed this out before, that, okay, the law says it's between a woman and her doctor or her practitioner because, as we know, many times that is not a doctor. But if it's a wanted pregnancy, there is no way that we could ever conceptualize that as a solitary experience. You know, first the couple, you know, tells their parents, and then they tell their friends, and then they tell their employer, and then pretty soon strangers are rubbing your belly on the subway, you know, and it's anything but solitary. There are so many relationships impacted by a pregnancy. So when you talk about, you know, going back and talking, you know, maybe not talking through whatever happened in those relationships that may have contributed to the abortion, let's go out to that wider circle first, because I know so many people chose the abortion because of reputation, fear of, you know, any strangers knowing, people in general, my social group in my small town, whatever. And oftentimes when you live in a small town, there is a backlash. If your abortion becomes known, there's gossip, there's social isolation. How do we deal with that fear of the group knowing about the abortion, or, you know, the resulting social punishment, if you will, if the news has gotten out?
Right. And, you know, this is especially hard for women when things like this get out, because women are designed to be relational. And when we're shunned or ignored or left out or talked about, that's the female version of bullying. And we feel it really deep in our beings. So, it's also important to understand that backlash or gossip occurs when people just don't have all of the information. And people are often not aware of the issues and factors surrounding abortion. Now, I want to be clear that there's never a circumstance where it's okay, but I think there's a lack of sensitivity to the woman. So people oftentimes think post-abortive women are cold, they're not feeling, they don't care, but that's generally not the case. You know, women choose abortion because they feel desperate, afraid, alone. So it only makes sense that people would not agree maybe with the death of a child to abortion, but they certainly lack sensitivity to her. You know, what I think about, Kim, is I think about the adulterous woman, and I think about her being dragged into the center of town because she was, you know, caught in the sin. And then Jesus said to them, you know, those of you without sin can cast the first stone. And that just resonates with me because we all have sin. We all have things we've done that we're not proud of. So I think we have to just remember, you know, that parable, that story, that truth about you know, everyone has sin. But in order to emotionally tolerate this experience, one must really become a part of a support community or network. Again, it all goes back to don't do this alone. There are people who get it. It's just so vital that she began a program of healing, you know, so that she can move on. I think to see
you know,
that
as we think
help,
about. Sure. I think what often happens too, Jessica, is that we return to the people who recommended abortion to us expecting that they can somehow comfort us when
right.
we realize that it's been a tragic mistake. How do we find safe people to do this with? Because, you know, I mean, maybe our parents were doing what they thought was right, trying to protect us. Maybe our friends, you know, saw us in desperate circumstances and drove us to the, but I mean, these folks are not the ones who are likely going to be able to help us process the fact that this was sinful, that this was a mistake, that this is, you know, a tragedy in our lives. How do we identify safety? And then how do we repair those relationships with those close people who became complicit with us in the abortion decision?
Right. That is so challenging. You know, you're right. The people that encourage abortion, sometimes they do it because they really believe that they're being helpful, because they simply do not understand the lasting impact. So it's vital that she call PATH or call a program of healing where people understand. You know, a lot of times she might want her husband or boyfriend or family members to get on board with her, and they may not. They may decide, you know what, it's over for me. And for them, maybe it is over. But her experience was very, is and was very real in that she carried this life, and this life was taken from her. So it's also very physical, very hormonal, very psychological. And everyone else is kind of on the outside looking in. So for her to be able to connect with somebody who has been there, done that, and survived it, that is what she needs. But for her to wait for other people to kind of get on board, that may never happen. And you just have to take care of yourself and go and get what you need. Because not everyone is safe, including family members.
Sure. And I think, too, I have seen so often where, you know, if you feel as though this is always going to be an issue with you and that person, I've seen so many people who've been able to overcome by not necessarily confronting it, but simply forgiving and then setting a good boundary and no longer looking to that person as a safe person on this issue. But, you know, forgiving in your heart, you might not even need to have that difficult conversation with them, but you may just need to say, as you acknowledge, Jessica, that they acted out of ignorance, so I forgive them on that basis, but I'm not going to look to them for spiritually grounded decision making in the future, you know. But sometimes I know the marriage relationship can be impacted, and I talked for a long while with a listener who just was unable to overcome her resentment over her husband's role in the abortion and now his refusal to seek counseling. And she says, yeah, okay, I have forgiven him, but these patterns recur where he doesn't see the role that he had in it. He won't go and work on the marriage. She says she's really worn out and she feels the marriage is a little bit vulnerable as a result.
Yeah, that's so devastating. Relationships are heavily hit by an abortion experience. You know, trust is lost, predictability is lost, if she's questioning the stability of the relationship, all of that makes sense. You know, and again, he's not going to see it the same way she sees it, because for her, she had to endure the abortion procedure, and he did not. So he is able to kind of disconnect and compartmentalize. You know, I think the other thing to remember is that men are made so differently than women, and they are made to kind of be solution or outcome driven, and women are all about the process. We need to talk about it and feel about it and think about it, and that is perfectly fine. But sometimes when we expect men to do that with us, they're incapable, and sometimes they're simply unwilling. So he may not get on board, but I think the what she said about, you know, I forgive him, but I'm still like mad at him, or, you know, he's still doing these things. Forgiveness will not stick or stay until you go through the process of anger. That has to happen. And if he can't hear it, then again, she needs to be with somebody who can hear her anger and validate it. Because it sounds like she's being dismissed. If he's not owning his part, he didn't protect her. I mean, they're both, you know, certainly responsible, but it's hard to go that road alone. And that the healthier she becomes, the bigger the gap will be between them, and then the relationship will be incredibly unstable.
Jessica Slavinsky of PATH and Rachel's Vineyard Retreats. She's a professional counselor, and we really so benefit from your wisdom each time we speak, Jennifer. Her ministry and bio are linked at cradlemyheart.org this week, where you can learn more.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Now stay with us here at Faith Radio. Your call's coming up, 1-800-811-3003, and the top news stories on the issue of life in the news this week here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you making Cradle My Heart part of your Sunday evening here at Faith Radio, and I am ready to talk to you with whatever is on your heart. Our conversation with Jessica Slavinsky, she's such a blessing. She really has such a deep understanding of the issues and such an accessible way of helping us understand them. So, if you have a question on follow-up for Jessica, who's no longer here live with us, please, you can email that to me, and we'll follow up with that on a future broadcast, all right? And it's very simple, kim@kimketola.com, and the last name is K-E-T-O-L-A. And you can find my email also at our website, which is easier to remember, which is cradlemyheart.org. So we would love to hear from you. And, of course, we're live for your comments and questions at 1-800-811-3003. And while I am not a professional counselor, I am here to listen, and I have heard many, 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 many stories and talked with many, many dozens of experts and can share some of what I've heard and what I've learned along the way as well. So please do join the conversation tonight, 1-800-811-3003. This is Sanctity of Human Life Month, and it's also when the March for Life happens in Washington, D.C., the largest pro-life event that's been going on now for over 40 years. And in anticipation of that, and because there is so much happening at the legislative level, the Supreme Court is deciding some very important cases on abortion, probably for the first time since the mid-2000s. There were a lot of prominent legal women, women in the legal profession, who arrived at the Supreme Court this week telling their stories, meaning to sway the Supreme Court and change public perceptions. About 110 women, members of the legal profession, shared stories about their abortions with the Supreme Court, trying to persuade, mostly against the Texas law that limits, as they put it, access to abortion procedures. Their story's part of a campaign encouraging women to talk openly about their experiences, and they've been sharing their stories online as well. And Kelly Baden is Director of State Advocacy for the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is representing the abortion clinics challenging the Texas law before the Supreme Court. She said the center felt it was important that women's personal stories be part of the strategy in the Supreme Court case. Well, positive abortion stories. I don't know that she really wanted to hear all of the stories in front of the Supreme Court. For that, you would have to go to the March for Life and listen to the Silent No More awareness speakers who have been giving their testimonies in Washington, in some cases in front of Congress, in front of legislative bodies for many, many years. And not because reproductive rights were involved, but because human lives are involved. One of the women who went to Washington this last week is an attorney, and she was among those who joined the brief, noted that she did so as an individual, not as a representative of her law firm, and she said she had not previously shared her story, but she felt it was important to speak out because of the current threat to women's reproductive rights. The Supreme Court has also agreed to hear a case about whether religious not-for-profits should have a role in helping employees get contraceptive coverage under the Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, speaking to Justice Kennedy is really what is the goal for many of these women. They're speaking to Justice Kennedy, the swing vote. These women, for better or for worse, are the types of people that Justice Kennedy relates to. Not everyone, however, agrees that the women's stories will help the abortion clinics win the case. There's a group that you're probably aware of, the Christian Not-for-Profit Alliance Defending Freedom, believes the stories will have little to do with the case before the court, first of all. One of their spokespeople, the legal communications director for Alliance Defending Freedom, Carrie Kupek, said to me, "It's a safety and health standards issue. And while personal stories are very important, that's not really what this case is about." And she's right about that in terms of what the Texas law is. Now, you can say, well, you're limiting access if you're requiring clinics to meet basic medical standards, which is what that new Texas law did. And, you know, as soon as it was enacted, gosh, all of these abortion clinics had to shut down because they didn't meet basic standards. So Carrie Kupek of Alliance Defending Freedom is absolutely right about that. Those behind the Texas lawsuit say the state law would limit access by forcing clinics to close over trivial matters. But, you know, let's hope that the Supreme Court weighs that honestly, because hundreds of women are still dying with legal abortion every year. And the stories don't make the news often, and the families don't press the cases, and the reasons should be fairly obvious. But abortion, and especially late-term abortion, is not a safe procedure. And so if you have a thought about this, 1-800-811-3003 is our phone number, 1-800-811-3003. And for me, the irony is, if you choose abortion to protect a career, and, you know, these women are being characterized as prominent in the legal profession, which means, I guess, that their opinions count more than anyone else. I don't know. If you really understand God's economy, you understand that no matter how prominent you may become, you're still going to have to face the fact that you had a hand in destroying a human life. At some point, you are going to have to face that, whether it's at your final judgment or whether it's as earthly consequences stack up on you, whether or not you choose to acknowledge them. And I'll tell you something. I had a very successful career in broadcasting, which was started with an abortion. When I was 23 years old and had my first major market job, and the relationship fell apart, and I felt like my career was what I had to do for myself at age 23, having already launched from home. And I didn't relish the abortion, but I did it to protect what I perceived as my economic future. And you know what happens when you do that? Jesus said to us very clearly, whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will live. You can't save yourself when you try to take action in that way. And then you realize your mistake. Now you're doubly in trouble. And each year, as that career would advance and as I would prosper, the reality of knowing what that had cost me became ultimately really, really almost impossible to bear. Whether or not these women are facing the reality of what this is going to actually mean for them in the long haul of their lives at this point, they are going to have to face that at some point. 1-800-811-3003 is our number if you want to join our conversation. 1-800-811-3003. We have some of these stories linked at our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cradlemyheart. And so if you are intrigued, want to read a little bit more after the show, you please go to the page, like the page. It'll show up then in your news feed, and you'll be able to stay on top of the pro-life stories that we're following for you in the news every week. I'm Kim Cattola, your host. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Phones open, 1-800-811-3003. And, you know, I think that it's important for us to understand how much of a spiritual battle this is. I definitely didn't perceive it as such at the time that I chose abortion. And I can tell you, anyone who's standing up to defend abortion as something that was a net good in their lives is probably not spiritually minded on this question. Because spiritually minded people understand that you can't build your happiness at the expense of another person, and not at the expense of the life of a defenseless human being, which is what abortion is and does. I'm not condemning women. I'm not condemning men. I'm not condemning anyone who's been involved in it, because I cannot throw that first stone. What I'm telling you is, when the fog lifted and when God's mercy and kindness allowed me to repent, you know, that's what the scriptures say. It's God's kindness that leads us to repentance. Then spiritually minded help arrived and showed me just how wrong that choice had been. Ultimately, there's no avoiding it. And I'll tell you what, if you have participated in abortion too, there's a new resource out, and it's an encouragement to pray for 21 days for the cause of life. And there's a prayer movement for life which started a number of days ago by the Colson Center, Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview. And it's written by one of my mentors, Scott Klusendorf, as well as John Stonestreet of Breakpoint. And it's a wonderful resource because you see the whole spectrum of the issue of women and men who have participated in abortion, women and men who have chosen life under extremely difficult circumstances. And then along with their stories, there are ways to pray for the broader issue that each story illustrates. And it's a great resource. And although they launched it, I think, 8 days ago now, you can go online and download it for free and begin your prayers today. And, as you know, start your 21-day calendar going at any point. The reasons why they've produced this resource have to do with the fact that, you know, the Bible affirms life, science affirms life, logic affirms life, our founding documents affirm life. And so having a prayer guide so that we can become spiritually minded on the issue, and so that we can empower our prayers with truth and with wisdom and with the great teaching of folks like Scott Klusendorf and John Stonestreet, it's just a great resource. And again, we've got that one linked on our Facebook page. So if you're not on Facebook, you shoot me a quick email, and you'll find that at cradlemyheart.org, and we can easily send you back the link on an email. 1-800-811-3003 is our phone number. And if you are interested in other pro-life resources, give us a call. Tell us what you'd like to know more about. We have an amazing library from all of the guests that have appeared on this program in the last 3.5 years. And whether you want to hear stories of people redeemed after abortion, whether you want to hear how to defend the pro-life worldview, whether you want to hear about people who pioneered post-abortion healing, whether you want to hear about Norma McCorvey, Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. We have a copy of her book, Won by Love. Do you need some pro-life resources? Call us, 1-800-811-3003. Let us know what you'd like to be connected with, and we'll see what we can do. I bet we've got something just for you. Kim Cotola, this is Cradle My Heart Radio, and stay with us after this
break. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us, and our phones are open. And if you need support and help with resources for your pro-life bookshelf, give us a call and we'll connect you. We have Randy Alcorn's book, Why Pro-Life. We have many, many great books. Kirk Walden's Building the Wall. You know, these folks have spent a lifetime standing for life in the public square in various capacities. If you never heard Randy Alcorn's story, that's a great story. He was just pastoring a local church in Oregon, and he and his parishioners decided to, you know, take a stand on the public sidewalk against the abortion facility nearby. And he was arrested, and they charged him under the RICO Act of organized crime, if you can imagine it, and he lost the case. And there was a judgment of over $1 million. And he realized that as a pastor, he would only be able to pay that from the tithes of the people at his church. And so he resigned the pastorate. And that's how he became a best-selling, world-renowned author. And he is somebody who has really lived out his pro-life convictions, inviting pregnant women into his home with him, he and his wife, Nancy. And his book, Why Pro-Life, is just a great resource to have. Love to get you a copy of that. Tell us how we may help you tonight. 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. Because, you know, there is a lot of great news. There is a lot of really great news. The Pregnancy Resource Movement, the Pregnancy Help Movement, I should say, put out their Life Trends report, and they have come to the conclusion that up to 300,000 babies were saved from abortion last year in pro-life pregnancy centers. Heartbeat International is one of the sponsoring organizations for pregnancy centers, and they, along with the CareNet centers and others, have really been making an impact. There are over 2,500 life-affirming pregnancy help centers and medical clinics in the United States, including those who affiliate with Heartbeat International, CareNet, the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, Life Matters Worldwide, and local organizations not affiliated with broader networks. And when you add in the number of mothers who have chosen life for their babies in 2015, the number of lives saved would jump to 300,000. That's the size of the city of Pittsburgh or Cincinnati. And it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing, amazing victory. And so we do not need to be discouraged. I want you, to because it's easy for me to get discouraged when we hear about the news, when we hear about politics, when we hear about President Obama, you know, threatening to veto what now Congress and the Senate have passed, defunding for Planned Parenthood. It's very easy to get discouraged, but don't lose heart. We will reap the benefit if we just stand fast in due time. You know, speaking of Alliance Defending Freedom, in the last break, Casey Maddox has a piece on their website about how President Obama, and it's got an amazing title. It says, President Obama can't veto the pro-life movement. And it reads in part this way, President Obama had an opportunity no other president has ever had. No president has ever been presented with a bill to stop Planned Parenthood's corporate welfare and redirect those funds to the thousands of better, more trustworthy, low-cost health care options for women and families. While the House of Representatives has voted numerous times to defund the nation's largest abortionist, the Senate's rules have allowed a minority of senators defending the abortion business to prevent that chamber from even holding the vote. But after the historic Senate vote in December, again, this is Casey Maddox on the ADF website, on Wednesday last week, the House approved a bill that would cut the $550 million annual taxpayer subsidy to Planned Parenthood and repeal key parts of the Affordable Care Act. Americans have never been so close to ending their compelled partnership with Planned Parenthood, which, by the way, spends tens of millions on marketing and advertising and many millions more getting political cronies elected, reelected, at the same time that it's seeing fewer patients and drastically reducing services. For the first time in history, the president's signature is all that prevented such a bill from becoming law. Unfortunately, little drama about what President Obama would do. He had already announced he would veto the bill. In fact, it's difficult to imagine any bill redirecting any taxpayer subsidies away from Planned Parenthood that this president would sign. As he has made clear, Obama and a minority in Congress would shut down the entire government to protect Planned Parenthood's access to our tax dollars. And, you know, Casey Maddox points this out, and we've mentioned it on this broadcast as well. Planned Parenthood has spent millions supporting President Obama's two campaigns, and it has now endorsed Hillary Clinton for president, the first presidential primary endorsement in its history. If anything, the abortion business that profits off taxpayer dollars is more committed than ever to spending its sizable excess revenues to elect politicians who will keep the cash coming. Those are the words of Casey Maddox, writing for Alliance Defending Freedom, and it's titled, President Obama Can't Veto the Pro-Life Movement. And the bottom line here is that, you know, the March for Life is coming up in Washington, D.C. January 22nd is the year this year, the 43rd anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision. And the media ignores it every year. The year I was there, there were easily a 500,000 people on the mall in Washington. But if you haven't joined the 500,000 or more marching for life, this is a great year to consider doing this. Evangelicals for Life are holding a conference that's going to be extremely enlightening and equipping. And you can be there to make sure that the media and D.C. politicians know that the pro-life movement is more energized than ever before. There are lots of local events if you can't get to Washington. There's, you know, statewide efforts in just about every state, I'm sure. And social media activism is great, but it cannot really match your presence at one of these events or prayerfully standing outside of an abortion facility, if God so leads you in that direction. Casey Maddox, senior counsel for ADF, concludes his comments by saying, look, no one said ending taxpayer subsidies for a $1 billion abortion business that bankrolls its defenders' campaigns would be easy. But he says Wednesday's vote should encourage us. The goal is closer than it has ever been before, and we have reason for optimism as we continue our work to defend life in 2016. President Obama can veto this bill, but he can't veto the pro-life movement. And, you know, our purpose here is to be spiritually minded. But what happened for me as the Holy Spirit came and changed my way of thinking about abortion and renewed my mind to show me the truth that life begins at conception and deserves defense. It deserves our protection. It deserves nurture from conception forward. To say that and to stand for that is so far above politics that it's an amazing thing that the two are even mingling. 1-800-811-3003. There was an amazing story in the news recently, too, about fetal pain. And if you missed that on our last broadcast, we have that one linked at our Facebook page. I hope that you'll read that because it really affirms and confirms the humanity of the unborn. You know, there are those of us who say, Well, we just can't know when life begins. And anyone who says that is speaking from a philosophical point of view, because medically, scientifically, there is no question that life begins at conception. Embryology textbooks confirm this. A distinct, living, and whole human being is present once fertilization has occurred. So what you're really saying is when life begins to be valuable, and because you are who you have always been from conception forward, you have always been valuable, and the same is true for preborn life as well. So if you didn't have a chance to give us a call for tonight's broadcast, I hope that you will get in touch with us either through social media or send us an email, and we'll try to get some resources into your hands too, because we need you. We need your voice. We need you to speak truth. We need you to help women who are being led astray, who are being exploited for profit by abortioneers. Your voice could be the voice that will save a life. Your voice also could be redeemed. Your voice could be restored. Your voice could be made new if there's an abortion in your past that has silenced you. I know that it's an extremely difficult truth to share, and you've got to be very careful and discerning with whom you'll share it. But I pray that God will provide someone for you to have that conversation with, and soon, if that's something that is overdue in your life. I can tell you, the freedom that you will gain is beyond compare. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Kim Catola. Go to cradlemyheart.org to find out about our upcoming program notes and to find articles and resources as well. cradlemyheart.org. Join us next week, and remember, Jesus loves you, and so do we. Thanks for listening. Your support makes this podcast stream possible. Information is available at myfaithradio.com.